Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Depending on where you are tuning in from, thank you. This is Darcy Butkus, also known as Inspector Bark. I'm a licensed private investigator here in the state of Georgia, where I reside. I'm also licensed in the state of Florida, where I have a second home. I also own my own detective agency here in Georgia. I've been a licensed PI over 8 years, and I own my own detective agency going on over 3 years already. Time flies. I did this because I wanted to be a voice for the animals. I detected wrongdoing over 15 years ago when I was living in Davie, Florida, outside of Fort Lauderdale, and wanted to help a so-called rescue. Didn't know what rescue was all about back then. I really didn't. But I learned fast and just in a short period of time. I realized this particular rescue, which wasn't a rescue, wasn't even registered with the Florida Department of Ag, which you're supposed to solicit donations, that this person was not treating the animals right and was not getting them the medical attention that they needed. Come to find out, I realized that this woman was a phony. And I did not stay quiet. I expressed my feelings. I'm expressing my First Amendment right called freedom of speech. And I wasn't going to be silent. 15 years later, I'm still not being silent. As much as these people want to try and discredit me, defame me, harass me, threaten me, try to intimidate, try to shame, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. There are so many people out there, like myself, that are afraid to come forward because of the threats, because of being bullied. You're not alone, folks. These rogue rescues and bad shelters and bad vets cannot silence all of us. They can't gag all of us. And if you got a cease and desist, throw it away. Well, save it. Put it in a folder like I do. It's nothing but a scare tactic, in my opinion. Unless, listen to me carefully, unless it is signed by a judge. Very rare will a judge put a gag order. I'm not going to get into politics, but everybody knows what's occurred with the former president, Trump. He flew back to New York City yesterday, pleaded not guilty. Whether you like him or not, the judge did not impose a gag order on him. Okay? So remember, it's your First Amendment right. You have every right. It's freedom of speech. Very, very strong constitutional right. So today is another day where we're going to talk about topics that some people don't feel comfortable with. And basically what I wrote in the episode description of pulling back the curtain on imposters within the animal welfare community, I wrote, "Greetings. On a weekly basis, I am seeing with my own eyes how the animal welfare industry is in turmoil. I'm not talking about the companies that provide the necessities for our pets to thrive, the food industry, the pharmaceuticals needed to treat our pets, nor the other companies that are truly in it for our four-legged loved ones, but those that are supposed to protect the animals. The amount of animal neglect, abuse, and cruelty charges we are seeing among these rogue rescues is downright frightening. The question I have is, who are these people that portray themselves as rescuers? What type of background do they come from? Oftentimes, whistleblowers come to me and share their stories and how the quote-unquote rescue they are fostering for deny them the proper care for a dog or cat in need of medical attention. As donations increase with the fundraiser meant for that animal, why is a foster being denied taking the animal to a vet? Oftentimes, a rogue rescue will state they have no money. The question people need to ask is, where is the money that is raised for that particular dog or cat really going? Join my guests and I on what imposters we will be pulling the curtain back on today. As you know, or if you don't know, and if you don't get my emails, I encourage you to send me a private message on my Inspector Bark Facebook page. Inspector Bark Facebook page, please kindly send me a private message and send me your email address, and I will add you to the contact, which, by the way, I'd say over almost 1,000 recipients. And this is episode number 57, season number 2. And what we're going to do today is we're going to do a deep dive into who really is behind the curtain, impersonating those who are supposed to help the animals and provide the animals a safe haven. But are they really? Are these so-called rescues and shelters putting the needs of the animals first and foremost? Do they truly care about the welfare of the dogs and cats? We're going to speak to whistleblowers and true animal advocates that believe otherwise. We also are receiving reports from pet owners that have lost their beloved four-legged family member to alleged veterinary malpractice. Scott Fine, as if you received the email, he is a founder of Joey's Legacy. He's waiting in the queue. He can hear everything I say, along with his guest, Dave Wirt. Dave's going to share his story. I'm first going to have Scotty come on, talk about Joey's legacy, what his team is doing to expose bad veterinarian practices. Dave Wirt will come on next. He will share a story about his French bulldog, Apollo, who is no longer with us. All this, folks, is in the body of the email. I give you all the links to go to Joey's Legacy private group page, ask to join. Dave has a Facebook page about Apollo's story. That's all within the body of the email. I give you everything on a silver platter. Following Scotty and Dave will be Paul Ebbs. He's a former animal control officer, now retired from Fulton County, Georgia, here in Atlanta. Paul will be touching on how certain dogs are deemed dangerous where some rescues, quote-unquote, are not disclosing bite histories to their fosters or adopters. And I just found a story on Facebook that I'll share during that segment. In line is Julia Sharp. She's located in Kentucky. She's a true animal advocate and whistleblower. She will be discussing a hot topic on how these pledges are a bait for bad rescues. She runs a page on Facebook called Stop the Trixie Foundation. Please, please, please follow the page. What I like to say in my podcast description, there is a slideshow presentation, and it takes about 5 or 7 seconds to rotate to the next screen. One of them is so true. To know how terrible, how fake a rescue actually is, yet everyone loves them because they put on a good show. Isn't that the truth? The next slide talks about, are you dealing with a rescue or a shuffler? And we'll get back to that in a minute. So I want to stay on schedule because we do have a tight two-hour segment. If you have any questions, concerns, or thoughts and you want to call in, if you wish to remain anonymous, that's fine, but we do not take block numbers. The number to call in is 563-999-3599. That's 563-999-3599. I promise to keep this at 10 minutes. I'm at 12:09. Let me tell you what my mission statement is. My mission statement as Inspector Bark is sniffing out the truth about rescues. It goes into the shelters, and it goes into these veterinary malpractice people that need to be exposed. And that's where Scott and his team come into play. My goal at Inspector Bark Detective Agency is to sniff out the truth about the rescues that you donate your hard-earned money to. I strive to ensure your money is going to the well-being of the dogs, not to line the rescue owner's pockets. Uncovering the truth, exposing abuse, and mishandling of donation dollars are just a tad of what I do. If anybody believes in my mission and my cause, feel free to send me an email at info@inspectorbark.com. Let me know if you have any true animal advocates or companies that would like to join my mission. Because what we need, and I've talked about this in the past, is I need for the whistleblowers out there throughout the country to have a bucket of money, to have money set aside for legal representation. These rescues are using donation funds, from what I believe, and trying to silence the whistleblowers from speaking the truth. Wouldn't it be a beautiful thing that we could say, we have looked at everything, we find and examine the facts and the evidence to be true, and yes, if you get a cease and desist, keep speaking the truth. Let them slap you with a lawsuit. Because now we will have lawyers to defend you. Defense. And on that note, it's exactly 12:10. We've got a tight schedule, so at 12:45, Paul Ebbs is going to call in. So right now, my first guest I'm going to bring in at this time is Scott Fine from Joey's Legacy. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Good afternoon, Darcy. How are you?
I am well, sir. I've got Dave still sitting in the queue. So when you're ready for Dave to come in, he can hear everything we're saying. I will bring him in. While you're speaking, I will respect you and mute myself in case my dogs bark or whatever reason. And I expect that for all of us callers to mute ourselves when we're not speaking. But Scotty, you sent me an email this morning, and I love what you want to present today. And by all means, fire away. But before I even ask you to begin on your subject, which I like very much and needs to be told, is how did you get started, Scott, and create Joey's Legacy?
Well, Joey's Legacy appeared on the scene October of 2017, which was 4 months after Joey died needlessly. The veterinarian that morning was unfortunately not Joey's regular vet. I do believe that if Joey's regular vet was there that morning, Joey would have survived that experience. Anyway, the substitute vet decided to rely on his 40-plus years as a veterinarian and guess what was wrong with Joey. He had some GI symptoms that I brought him in for. Instead of doing labs to determine a more definite diagnosis, he guessed at what was wrong. Unfortunately, his guess was far off, and based on his incorrect assessment, he gave Joey an injection of a drug known as Convenia, which is known to be toxic to the kidneys, to kidneys that are not healthy, which was actually Joey's problem. He was in early stage renal failure, not known till the next day when labs were actually done. Anyway, the Convenia immediately began to destroy Joey's kidneys, and unfortunately 2 days later he was unable to breathe or excrete urine, and so unfortunately we had to say goodbye to Joey. And after a period of mourning, we decided to start a Facebook page called Joey's Legacy Vet Mal Victims, and we thought we would see if there was anyone else out there that had a similar experience. And lo and behold, before we knew it, within a matter of couple of months, we had several hundred members who were reporting similar experiences with their veterinarians. But let me inject something before I continue so you don't think this is a vet bashing opportunity. We fully acknowledge that the majority of veterinarians out there are caring and compassionate individuals that entered the profession for the right reason, because they did have a profound love for companion animals. As in any occupation, there are rogue members, and we deal with the rogue members of the veterinary profession. About half the people we see, almost all the people we see have experienced what our veterinary team considers to be breaching the standard of care, also known as negligence or malpractice. But what we find especially offensive is when the rogue vets decide to add insult to injury and begin to falsify their medical records, conceal information from the owner about the actual condition of their loved one, and other deceptive acts. And we are very aggressive in pursuing those veterinarians who choose to alter medical records to cover their negligence, technically called spoliation.
Scott,
let me
stop you right there. Scott, when you say they, your team, can you share with the listeners who you mean by they? Because they need, you don't have to mention names, but your team that works alongside you.
We have a team of 10 veterinarians that review medical records for individuals that believe they've had experiences with veterinary negligence and malpractice. And we work with over 40 animal law firms around the country that take our vet's opinion letters and pursue legal action against the veterinarians. In many cases, it includes fraud, which is the falsification of medical records, and that can lead to significant damages well above what the pet parent is entitled to by law when they prove negligence. So we take a very hard line against deception, and I'm actually working on a project where I'm trying to have a conversation with one of the local officials in the district attorney's office. I would really like to hear their thoughts about pursuing falsifying medical records in the criminal world as a misdemeanor. And I mm-hmm. hope to have good news on that in the near future, because the message has to be sent to these rogue practitioners that it's bad enough to act in a reckless, sloppy fashion and commit malpractice. But when you add salt to the wound by lying to the owner of the patient, it makes it a whole lot worse. And so we try to drive that point home in any way we can. You know, vets are used to a very comfortable environment, knowing that vet boards are unlikely to take any disciplinary action if they are negligent or commit malpractice. You almost have to, as a veterinarian, you almost have to commit a crime, such as using veterinary drugs for personal use or something near criminal like that, before the vet board will step up. It's just they protect their veterinarians very unfair. And we try to combat that. It's very difficult to do. So we found our own way to deal with the situation and pursue justice.
Great. On that note, you have often said, Scott, and I totally agree with you, that these veterinarian boards, each state has them, and I swear that they all go off the same playbook. They're spineless. They protect their own, which is ridiculous. They're supposed to, you know, where's their integrity, and seeing these animals that continue to die over something that they should have punished the veterinarian going back years ago. We know of a case in South Florida where this Dr. Green, his name is on probation. I think it got lifted, and he's in his late 70s. And this rogue rescue is using his name and his license. And what I believe is happening in the state of Florida, only a veterinarian can give rabies vaccinations. And I think they're having their people do it, giving these rabies vaccinations and using his name. And again, people are afraid to come forward. At this moment, I'm going to just bring in Julia, who's waiting in the queue. And Julia, I'm just going to have you come in, and then we're going to bring in David, because I really want to stay close to schedule. But as my co-host, Julia, anytime you want to chime in, if you want to add something, let me bring you in right now. David, Dave, give me just a couple more minutes, buddy, and you're going to come on. If there's anything that Julia wants to add to what Scott has to say, Julia, you're on the air right now. Welcome.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Scott. I'm so sorry for what you've gone through.
Thank you.
Want to say, yes, the vet, I love my vet. I have good vets, but the vet boards, that's a different story, and you are so right. It is a big issue. We have run across people practicing veterinary medicine here in Kentucky, and we can't get the vet boards or the police or anyone to do anything about it. You know, the vet board says, well, they're not a vet, so we're not going to do anything. You know, there's also issues with in the horse industry with lay people doing dentals, and the vet board's not really helping the veterinarians who are trying to get something done about this. So I don't really have a lot of faith in the veterinary boards. And I'm so sorry you're dealing with this.
Scott, that comes to mind, what Julia just said. One of the stories in the Volume 1 and Volume 2 that I have a set of, which is very hard to get through, is one dog, the veterinarian, get this, Julia, allowed his receptionist to do either some type of surgery or was it a dental? Scott, you'll know better than me. I mean, you know all these like the back of your hand. And the dog died. The vet allowed his receptionist to do the surgery.
There was one case that was actually went to court, and we were successful enough to get the entire practice shut down. The vet allowed the receptionist to perform or attempt to perform a spay on the dog, and the dog just hemorrhaged to death. And there are several stories where the vet allows the has allowed the front desk personnel to do a dental cleaning, but it's not just that simple. There's anesthesia involved. There's lab work that has to be done. So it's not just a matter of opening the dog's mouth and starting to clean the teeth. There's a lot more involved, and that's where those dentals go south. And that's actually the most common complaint we get as far as negligence and malpractice goes, dental cleanings that go south.
And that is of what, the spay and neuter or dental?
No, the dentals are the most common complaints. Either the vet fails to do a pre-dental lab work, and it turned out the kidney values are sky high, which can create a significant issue when it comes to anesthesia. They'll insert the esophageal tube down the wrong way, nick the trachea. There's lots of different things, unfortunately, that happen at the hands of unskilled, untrained
office staff. They should have lab
and that's
work.
Just, of course,
And antibiotics.
Amp up the top line.
They should start antibiotics 3 days before a dental.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and in many cases that doesn't happen. So it's all a matter of unskilled, untrained on the part of the front desk people and outright negligence and malpractice when it comes to the vets and the vet techs. So. Unfortunately, we're kept very busy. We talk to 40 to 50 people a month that we assist with these cases. So it's just an ongoing thing, and I don't know when it – I don't know if it'll ever die down. I don't know. Very sad. You know, in 6 years, we've helped hundreds and hundreds of people. And sometimes I hope – I wake up and I say, no calls today, please. And rarely does that happen.
I'm sorry.
And let me just remind our listeners, like Scott, like myself, we do this on our own time and dime. I'm not getting paid to do this podcast. It costs me money to do this podcast. You know, the hours I put in to disseminate the email, create the episode, monthly cost of Blog Talk Radio. We do this on our own time and dime because we do it for the animals. Julia, the same. She keeps speaking the truth and trying to expose wrongdoing. And I commend both of you. Both of you, we spoke over the weekend and shared our frustration, did we not?
Yes. And, something you said at the beginning of this show when you were talking about what we've gone through, We have been crucified. We have been demonized. We have been slammed and smeared. And through all of that, I've never personally filed a lawsuit against anybody. I figure that my good work stands by itself. I don't have to, you know. And all these people are suing us, Darcy. Why? Are we just too close
because
to the
truth? They fear you. Those that attempt to smear you fear you. And we're going to talk about that in the next hour because I'm going to now bring in Dave. He's been very kind and waiting in the queue. So, Scotty, I'm going to introduce Dave, and if you want to chime in, you know this case better than I. It's a sad story, Julia. I don't know if you had a chance to go to Apollo's story, but let me go ahead and bring Dave in. Dave, you are on the air with Inspector Bark, and Scott and Julia, welcome.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
Hey,
now,
Dave.
Just so you all know, there's sometimes like a 2 to 3 second delay, so I apologize for that. Dave, I'm going to give you the podium here, sir. I'm going to mute myself, and anytime I want to chime in, I'm going to unmute myself. Scott, if you could do the same, Julia, but feel free to chime in. Dave, you've got the stage here, and please share your story about Apollo. It's a tough one. It's a tough one to listen to, gang. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, it is, and I'll try to make it through this without losing it. But January of this year, well, first I'll start off. Apollo was a 2.5-year-old French bulldog that was purchased from a very, very, very top-notch breeder in our area. The DNA testing, all the different stuff that was done, she had all access to that. And in her eyes and both vets that we saw, Apollo was in perfect shape, no problem. Well, after maybe a year and a half or so, we noticed due through playing and sometimes if he ate too fast, he would throw up a little bit. But in general, he really couldn't play as good as other dogs because his nostrils did start to close. They were nice and open when we got him, and they stayed open for quite some time. But as time grew on, they closed up a little bit, and he was having problems, terrible snore, all that good stuff that Frenchies do, but that wasn't a good sign. So I elected to go to our local vet, who we love, and he said, well, he goes, I really think he could benefit from a nostril surgery, and I recommend a place to go to. And I said, okay, trust him, been with him for 20 years. So we went to this facility in Allentown, Pennsylvania. It's about an hour from us, and met with the facility director. And then he brought out a veterinarian, and she talked to us about Apollo. They gave him an examination, even some x-rays and everything, and got back to us and said, yeah, he would really benefit from the surgery, and you should probably neuter him at the same time while he was under. So I wasn't keen on the neutering idea, but I figured, well, since he's already going to be under, we'll take care of that. I took Apollo down to the facility on January 16th at 8:30 a.m., met with the vet again. She said, no problem. She said, you know, I just did one last week. She goes, we do it all the time. We're a 24-hour facility. We're fully staffed at all times. If anything was to happen, we're on it. We're right there. So that, you know, kind of made me feel a little bit better and a little bit more secure. And at that time, they had me turn Apollo over to them, and we were getting ready to leave, and I bent down, gave him a kiss on his head, told him everything was going to be good. And we went back, as we were walking back to the car, I looked back and I could just see he was staring at me like, what's going on? Where are you going, Dad? And I felt terrible. I felt like, I'm not happy. I got a quarter of the way home, and I said to myself, I said, I don't like this. It just doesn't feel right. And my wife, trying to comfort me, said, look, you know, this is evidently a big facility. They've got all these doctors here. I think this is the best place for him to give him a better quality of life. I said, you're right. I said, it'll be tough for maybe 4 or 5 days. I said, but he definitely will have a better quality of life. So he was scheduled for surgery in the morning, and I had called down. I was waiting. Of course, I was waiting for a call from the vet to tell me what was going on. And I didn't, at 4:30 p.m., I was concerned that I didn't hear back from anybody yet. So I called down there and had to basically threaten that I wanted to get the doctor on the phone to find out how the surgery went. They're like, okay, well, the vet comes on like I'm troubling her. She's like, I'm trying to get out of here for the day. What do you need? I said, well, I'd like to know how my dog is, to be honest with you. And I had found out he had came out from surgery at 12:30. So here's, you know, 4.5 hours has gone by. I haven't heard anything about my dog, so I insisted to talk to the vet. She said, oh, he's fine. He's doing good. He's breathing better already. Call us tomorrow morning around 9 o'clock, and we'll get you scheduled to come down and pick him up. So I'm like, okay, I feel better now, you know, that I know that. Later on in the evening, I received a phone call at 12:30 a.m., around 12:30, and it was whoever was in charge of taking care of him that night said to me, hey, Apollo was having some problems breathing. It's nothing to worry about. Sometimes that happens post-op. I just wanted to let you know we put him in an oxygen tent and increased his oxygen levels. But don't worry about anything. So, of course, now I'm worried. Natural parental instinct kicked in. So maybe 45 minutes later, they call me, and they're telling me that Apollo's in trouble, and they lost him once. They brought him back. He went into cardiac arrest. And that they're performing CPR on him now, but it's been almost an hour. Go figure, an hour for CPR. She says, but his eyes are fixed, and I don't know what his neurological function would be even if he came back. We want permission from you to stop. I'm like, well, yes, stop. I said, even if a miracle that he did come back, he's going to be brain dead. I mean, anybody that knows anything medical would know after an hour, you're not coming back. Chances are you're gone. So I then, you know, immediately asked whoever was in charge there what happened. And she says to me, basically, well, sometimes it happens. And, you know, the dogs can take a turn for the worse. And unfortunately, he passed away. And I was just in an utter state of shock. My wife was crying. I started crying. We're like, this isn't right. I said, something's not right here. I said, I don't understand this. So she then proceeded to ask me, well, what would you like to do? Would you like to come down and see him? I'm like, I'm not driving an hour to see my dog who is now dead because I don't know how I'm going to handle myself in this situation in your office, thinking you guys let my dog die. You're supposed to be this high-dollar facility. This was a $5,000 procedure, and they killed my dog. I said, no. I said, have him cremated, and I said, send the remains to me. Now, here's where it gets a little weird. the lady at the veterinary surgery center says to me, she goes, well, you'll have to come pick up his remains. We don't mail them or FedEx them. They have to be FedExed, and Mr. Wirt, that'll be about $30. I said, if you don't FedEx his remains to me, I said, I'm going to come down there, and I said, all hell's going to break loose. So she hung up. I then called first thing in the morning. I needed to talk to the surgeon. I wanted explanations of everything. Surgeon didn't return call. I called, had to, again, go crazy with somebody to finally get the surgeon on the phone. She gets on the phone like I'm bothering her, and she's like, well, what can I do for you? I said, I want to know what happened to my dog. I said, that's what I want to know. I said, what happened? And again, I get the, well, he had complications in post-op. These things happen, and unfortunately he passed away. I'm sorry. Again, not giving me any real thing. So she hung up. I immediately called back to the clinic, and I said, I'm requesting all notes from the time he went in there till the time of his death. I said, I want to know who was working that night, what their qualifications were. I want to know how many patients were in there that night. I didn't care if it was a rabbit, a parrot, a dog, a cat, whatever. I want to know how many people you had on staff that night and how many patients you were taking care of. So I waited and waited, and about a half hour later, I did get a fax coming through with what I asked for. After that, 2 minutes later, one of the clinic's receptionist or whoever they were called me immediately back and said, oh, Mr. Word, I'm told to tell you that there's still things that need to be done. This isn't complete. I'm like, okay. I said, well, I expect to hear them back, get those as well. She said, well, at this time, all correspondence has to be done through a lawyer. And I'm like, what? I said, what do I need a lawyer for? I said, I just want to know what happened to my dog, and I have a few questions. Well, it was then at that time, she again repeated to me, well, you'll have to have a surgeon contact us from this point on out, and hung up.
Dave, let me interrupt you, Ms. Darcy.
Sure.
When you're calling and talking to these people, are you taking down their names?
I didn't at first, to be honest with you, because one thing, it was 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. I had all this terrible news, and no, I didn't at that time, no.
Okay, but then you called back in the morning, right? Then you called back in the morning,
correct? I called back in the morning and to ask for everything, and I have that young lady's name written down. I don't have it here with me now. It's in my upstairs office, but that's her name, and then I wrote down about any further correspondence needs to be done through an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I have her name at least. But the
Go ahead. You know, what you're saying and describing is what I feel people that work around animals all the time, whether it's a rescue, a veterinarian practice, a shelter, I think these people become emotionally detached. Become completely removed and totally desensitized. Like they don't consider
Absolutely.
The fact that this little dog, your son, as you refer to him in your story about Apollo, that they just become desensitized. And it's sad because the
yes.
way that they handle it and said, oh, it just happened. Sorry. Like move on. No, This is where most people probably do move on, Dave, but people like yourself and the Scotts in the world and the Julias, we need to keep pushing and getting answers, and that's what you're doing. But let me just ask you, because we're a little bit on a time crunch, thank you, Dave. How did you find Scott and Joey's legacy, and how is he helping you to get the answers that you deserve and justice for Apollo?
Well, the first thing I'm thinking about is I need an attorney. And when I called my personal attorney who is working on something for me, he said, I don't handle anything like a malpractice for a dog. So I then went on the internet, looked up Google for lawyers for animal rights. And that's when I had saw the organization that Scott recommended me to, which, what's the name of it? The lawyer animal firm, something like that, I believe, Scott.
The animal law firm in Media, Pennsylvania.
Correct. And I'm in Pennsylvania, so I'm like, great, I'm contacting these guys. And in the beginning, they talked to me about what they can do and whatnot. They asked me to get certain things and then, you know, schedule a interview. So that's how I got to meet them, through Scott. And they recommended Joey's Legacy highly as well. And Scott recommended them highly well.
So now it's today, April 5th. It just happened in mid-January. I think you said January 16th, correct?
Yes.
You received all the necessary documents from this so-called veterinarian hospital?
Yeah, I had sent them a spoliation letter through my paralegal at my lawyer's office. She was kind enough to do that. We sent two certified letters with that and an email. And lo and behold, this last Friday, they sent me everything that they supposedly have. So I have that in my possession now.
So when you and I spoke a couple weeks ago, knowing that you were coming on this podcast, you had shared with me the name of the clinic where Apollo took his last breath. And I went on their Facebook page, and I said to you, they have reviews. You need to share your story, because a review cannot be removed if it's a negative review on Facebook. They can disable the review section. And sure enough, you had put a review on there, but unfortunately you put on recommend versus not recommend. So remember, these people get stars. They get stuck. No, it's okay. Listen, you were emotional, basket case as well as your wife. I mean, this is heartbreaking. But a lot of the general public is so unaware of this, and maybe they want to stick their head in the sand and believe everything is okay, but they need to be made aware, and that's why those reviews are important. And until they disable the review segment of their Facebook page, I would get every friend of yours involved and share the story and get other people to see it. And if it gets disabled, their review section on Facebook, then you go to Google Reviews. Don't give up.
Yep.
And I really believe in that, because persistence – and here's a quote. I don't know where it's from, and maybe, Julia, you can chime in. I love this quote. You should not rest until the conditions no longer exist. You should not rest until empty words are replaced with decisive action. And on that, Ben Franklin's famous quote, which I love saying, well done is better than well said. And these people will yes you to death and say, oh, things will change, but it's all talk. You know, we need to change what's happening with decisive action. And that, if it means presenting her in front of the board, the veterinarian board for Pennsylvania, it works, but you got to be persistent.
Absolutely. And as of today, I am having our second interview with Christina from the animal law firm. And I also have received letters from several veterinarians, my local veterinarian, and also one of Scott's veterinarians, that they noticed discrepancies in Apollo's paperwork. And basically, I don't want to hang on here too long for you, but Apollo aspirated 5 times at 5 p.m. The night after the surgery. So the very next note was at 8 o'clock. They said that somebody reported Apollo was turning blue. At 8 o'clock, for a few hours later, again, no reports. The only real reports were taken between, approximately 11 o'clock p.m., basically saying that they started emergency procedures. So my question to everybody there is the simple fact, why was no vital signs or anything taken of Apollo to clue them in that there's a problem? The last vitals were taken at 5 p.m. When was it? It was earlier than 5 p.m., and you could already see by what they've reported, his oxygen levels were going down, and his heartbeat was rising. They absolutely, I firmly believe, nobody was watching my dog until they noticed at 8 o'clock, hey, this dog's turning blue. What do we do? I highly think Apollo could have been saved if it was in a place where they jumped into action and started to do something, especially with a brachiomatic breed, French bulldog, that breathing is so critical to them. And when they tried at 10:30, 11 o'clock, they said, well, you know, let's intubate him. Okay. They couldn't get a tube down his throat. They couldn't even get the smallest tube down his throat because it had already completely swelled shut.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
not too long after that.
Symptoms. He definitely had signs and symptoms of respiratory distress.
And, well, sure.
And due to the patient overload and not watching their patients during post-op, which is critical. I mean, I was a nurse, not with animals, but with humans. You have to check these patients constantly. And it sounds like they just didn't. And I think moving forward, you know, you've got great people that you've aligned yourself with for Apollo and getting justice for Apollo. But also, I think you deserve some type of financial settlement here. And they'll try and get you to sign a gag order and all that and not speak.
I'll never sign an NDA in any way, shape, or form.
An NDA, people, you know, it means non-disclosure agreement. No, I won't either. I won't.
Good. I wouldn't care how much money they offered me. I'll never sign one.
Good.
Not going to happen.
Scott, what do you have to say about this case that came across your desk back in January or whenever Dave reached out to you?
The gaps of time in the records that Dave was just describing, I believe, and I'm not an attorney, but I believe Christine is going to be able to draw an inference that information that was omitted should be considered adverse to the vet facility. In other words, they left out information that would incriminate them and make them look negligent and that like they committed malpractice. So I think Dave hopefully will be able to the law firm will be able to make that argument, and Dave should hopefully achieve some sort of justice from this. They just simply based on that, if nothing else.
Yeah, I hope so, because people need to know about this world of these high production veterinary facilities, that it's almost like like a self-checkout at a Walmart. It's like, get it, bring it in, see you later.
They don't think the owners are going to ever come back for the records, Dave. That's why a lot of them are very sloppy with record keeping. That's what it is. And they're hoping you don't come back for the records. And, of course, you did. And now the chickens are going to come home to roost, especially hopefully the animal law firm can make that happen.
Well, I hope so, too, because I basically not having anything, to me, is an admission of they weren't caring for my boy.
Exactly.
There's nothing there showing me that you cared about my boy. You didn't take any vitals after he threw up 5 times. You waited to jump into action after somebody walked by his cage probably and went, hey, dude, this guy's turning purple. What should we do? That's
wow.
The way I feel.
Yep. Wow.
You know, Dave, Darcy can tell you, having been a nurse, and I was in human health care for 24 years, and we can both tell you, and you may already know, if it's not documented, it never happened. So
right.
for them to come back and say, oh yeah, we did this, no, you didn't. Even if you did, no, you didn't.
I just can't believe, even if they looked at their notes before they even sent them to me, that they just left all of that open, and knowing that the law states that they have to take the vitals in Pennsylvania and many states, like minimally an hour, that they left that all out, and they didn't think that somebody wouldn't notice that. We did.
Right.
You
absolutely.
Know,
very sad.
Vet boards are very funny with that kind of stuff. They dismissed Joey's practice below the standard of care, that count one, but count two was failing to keep contemporaneous records, and they nailed the vet on that, failing to document vital signs, failing to document dosage, the name of the med, that kind of a thing. The vet got tagged for that. He got a fine for that, but not for causing the death of Joey. So
right.
Go figure it out.
Well, we have the state of Pennsylvania did contact me, which I was shocked, asking for the records of everything that happened. He told me I have 2 weeks to present them. Based upon what Christina tells me today, I will either send them to them or not. I will go off of Christina's advice on what to do.
Okay, good.
Definitely.
She's an excellent attorney.
Yeah. Is there anything
Absolutely.
Else, Dave, that you'd like to share with our audience before I move on? Because Paul, the animal control officer, is
yeah.
waiting in the queue.
Well, I belong to several French bulldog forums, and I look at them a lot. And when people get on there and say, hey, my vet's recommending this surgery, blah, 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 first thing I say to them is I send them a copy of Apollo's story, but then I tell them, please, please, please research this vet, look at the reviews, talk to the breeders in your area in regards to who they use if they have problems. And the number one thing I tell them to do, which I did not do, go with your gut. Before you do anything, if your gut's telling you you don't like this or it doesn't feel right, don't do it. Because we all know that most of the time our first instinct is the right instinct. That's all I can say.
Dave, on that note, I have a folder of different sayings and all that, and I'm pulling it out right now. I'm looking at it. Never discredit your gut instinct. You're not being paranoid. Your body can pick up on vibrations, some better than others, and
yep.
if something deep inside you says something's not right about a person or situation, trust it and keep it pushing.
Yeah,
mm-hmm, there you
that.
Go.
Absolutely.
And I absolutely. And on that note, folks, if you go to Facebook and type in the Facebook browser, Apollo's story, it says underneath it, veterinarian, 44 followers, please, 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 go and like this story. It's sad to read, but you need to know what's going on out there because we've got a lot of imposters, and we're going to pull back the curtain on them. Dave, I appreciate you coming on to this podcast.
No problem.
And I hope Scotty launches his podcast, because we need more people with a platform to call out wrongdoing. And I'm pushing Scott as Joey's Legacy to develop his own podcast, and I'll help him every way I can. And, Dave, thank you so much. Keep us posted, okay?
You got it. Have a good day, guys.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All
thank
right.
you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. So with that note, what I'd like to do is bring in Paul Ebbs. He is a retired animal control officer. I've asked him to talk about, shifting gears here, about dangerous dog bites, okay? We are seeing more and more of these cases happening, and I really believe it is because of this no-kill mentality. And Julia, jump in anytime you want. Scotty, please stay on. Love to have you stay on. I'm going to bring in Paul right now. Scott may have hung up, but if he calls back in, I'll put him in. I'll put him on and mute. But if he's got other things to do, then I understand. Right now, I've just added Paul Ebbs. Paul, you are on the Inspector Bark Show. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to talk
Hi,
to you.
Paul.
Paul, you're also, Julie is on the call as well. She's from Kentucky, a great animal advocate over there, and blowing the whistle on a bad dude that apparently the local officials aren't doing a damn thing. Let's talk a little bit about, Paul, your background and how many years you were in the animal welfare community and what you did here in Georgia.
Well, I was active in working in animal welfare for 31 years, both with animal control, and I was the director of a humane society and designed an animal control program and implemented it in the mountains of North Georgia in Raven County. And much smaller scale than the metro area. But, you know, problems are problems. Issues are a little different, but not all that different. And so I worked with Fulton County twice, both as a supervisor and as the animal cruelty investigator. I worked a 12-year and a 13-year stint, and then I had 6 years up in the mountains. So it was kind of interesting. But the most of the issue that I think you want to talk about with the, because I believe it's the hiding of the nature of a dog to get them out into the public, essentially.
Correct.
Correct.
And we're seeing more and more of that. Yes. I'd like to hear more about that from your standpoint and from your viewpoint.
Well, I think it's very real. I've objected to it on several occasions when I was working in Atlanta. I wasn't working in adoptions there. When I was in Raven, I did have control of adoptions. But, you know, the idea is to get the animals out, and we have untrained people that, oh, he's just upset because, you know, he's in the shelter. Well, that's probably true. That's a lot of that. But if he bites somebody, you got to look at it. There, I had a case with, of all things, a Boston Terrier. Wonderful little dog. Didn't realize he'd bitten everybody. On his third bite, he bit a young lady in the face for over 100 stitches. And I went on and charged. It was a rescue, a good, reputable rescue out of Tennessee. But they hadn't told anybody. They would keep adopting this dog back. The third bite. Now, this seems like there's a lot of liability there. And I let the woman know, you know, contact me. You need to talk to a lawyer, and if you need to talk to me, just call me. She never did, but I'm not sure how that went, whether she called the shelter and they blocked her, and that's happened. Or, don't know, the boyfriend had the dog, and I just don't know what happened, but she was pretty irritated about it. And by the third bite that they cover up, they're getting into some serious liability now. And then Lifeline blocked the citation. I wrote the citation, said, I'm sorry, I have to charge you by law and with vicious dog. And to be honest, you should be charged under the under the Dangerous Dog Act with a dangerous dog. And at that time, well, they've changed it a little, tweaked the law a little bit, but they were required to be charged, and it was a rescue that was well known, and I think the director of the Lifeline, CEO, knew them well. And they nixed it. They wouldn't serve the ticket, so we were we didn't go there. And that's the kind of stuff that can go on. That's I've seen it in the adoptions just when I've been around, that people are bitten and they covered up and adopt the dog to somebody else. I
yeah.
wish that I could have brought Natalie. You there?
Yeah, who's Natalie? Go ahead. I wanted to, yeah, go ahead.
Natalie, I don't want to say her last name because I don't have any permission to say that, but Natalie,
okay.
I'm sure would come on your podcast. She just would. And she adopted a dog from DeKalb Lifeline, and I was put in touch with her, and it had some behavior issues, they said, pretty much immediately with somebody and when she got it home. But she fell in love with the dog, and then the animal was at her mother's house where she has a chihuahua, a little dog, and another person walked into the house, and she bit them in the leg, apparently not all that far from the femoral artery. So they did charge her. Lifeline had no responsibility at all, which it would have been a hard one to prove because that was a second bite. They charged her, and it was during the COVID, and it cost her several thousand dollars to keep this dog during the criminal charges against her were mm-hmm. obstruction and just, I'm like, what? Because a friend put me in touch with her, and I'm like, I don't know your situation. I can tell you what the law is and what they should have done. I said, they if they wanted to charge you, they should have charged you under the state dangerous dog ordinance and picked the dog up and kept them for 15 days. And then there would have been a hearing, and it goes one way or the other. You have your chance to present your evidence, and they have their chance to present theirs, and yada, yada, in 15 days, well, actually 30. You got 15 days to respond and 30 days for the hearing. So on 30 days, they had to have a hearing with the board. So that's what should have happened. She said, oh, I signed that. I said, what do you mean you signed that? They said I could get my dog out if I would sign that. I said, do you know what you signed? And she's a nurse. She's not a stupid woman. I said, you admitted now that your dog is vicious, and that you have to, once a year, you're going to have to give them a fee to keep the dog. You've got to keep the dog under, exacting conditions. I said, did you not know that? She said, well, this is what they said I had to do to get the dog back.
Paul,
yes.
Julia, is he coming in garbled? Is he coming in garbled?
Yes, a little bit, yes, yes.
Well,
okay, I didn't want it to be my Bluetooth.
No, it's not yours. It's coming in garbled.
I'm sitting here with my phone and my laptop. Should I get rid of one? I have to get rid of the laptop.
Yeah,
I'm
trying to
get rid of
one.
Well, it may be.
It was just suddenly garbled. Am I coming through garbled?
Is that better?
You're coming in fine, Julia.
How about me?
You are too.
How am I coming?
Yeah.
Okay. I had too much on there. All right.
There you are.
So I dropped
the laptop. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah,
good
what
job.
Happened
yeah.
to today? I started listening at 12:30.
Gotcha.
Thought I was in
thank
line.
You.
Then I realized that I was not, and I had to go. So I went to the phone. Anyway, you know that I'm not real good with this stuff. So,
yeah.
All right.
That's
so
okay.
Natalie McLeese is her case has now been settled. I think they ended up dismissing the county charges because they were just abusing her, and in an effort to put her dog down. Now, I talked to her when we've gone on. I said, Natalie, there's a couple of things. You're an intelligent person. You love your dog. I understand that. It is entirely possible that if they knew the dog had issues, it's entirely possible that they knew there were bites before. But I don't know that. I said, I have seen that over at Fulton County where they have done that in an effort to get a dog out. You should never have been adopted this dog. It should have never gone to you. But now you're in love with the dog. But you have incredible liability. Now that you have two bites on you, if this dog does anything else, you're going into felony land. I mean, you're just, it's a loaded gun. You absolutely cannot have this dog around anybody. And I don't know if he's that bad, or if, but that's what the category he fell into, and then you need that category because some of these dogs are that bad. So
there are dogs that are just not wired right.
Yeah, there are dogs that are just not wired right.
They're broken, and we have to be strong enough to do the right thing and let them go. There are thousands and thousands of wonderful, loving, nice dogs sitting out there begging for a chance. Why are we putting resources into dangerous animals?
And that, and you when you've got overcrowded shelters that, you know, why are you adopting these dogs out that are questionable when you're putting, you know, you've got dogs living in filth? You know, I mean, it's just, but I get nobody's a professional. These people are mostly, even the professionals aren't trained professionals. You know, just a lot of times the adoption people just like animals, you know, they're always so cute and stuff. They learn over time. I'm not saying they're ignorant because they're not, but they have covered, it's my experience that they have covered on several occasions dogs that had a propensity to bite and didn't say anything about it. And that's an issue. You got kids getting bit in the face, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a major issue. And let me tell you about the big case out in Texas. Do you all remember right before Christmas, this girl was hired as a pet sitter to go take care of these two dogs. She went one time with the owners there, and then she went alone. She opened the front door, and these two big dogs attacked her and literally ripped her face off. And the neighbor could screaming, and thank God the door was left ajar. But it took, by the time the cops got there, a half hour, maybe even longer, to get to her because the dogs ripped her clothes off, mutilated her face, laying in a pool of blood in the living room. They couldn't get to her. I mean, this is a famous case. And come to find out, one of the dogs, I believe, was a foster from a rescue in Tennessee. So now we've got a lawsuit that originated in Texas. They have to go after the rescue, which is in another state. Again, you know, you mentioned, Paul, I respectfully disagree with you, buddy, where you said it was a reputable rescue. Well, how can you be a reputable rescue if you're not disclosing a dog bite, even with a Boston Terrier? You know, I hear people say, oh, it's a small dog. They're not going to do any harm. Well, the dog has teeth, don't they? So I am all about, you know, you have to be transparent. You have to disclose. And if this dog is a problem dog, as Julia referred to, then sadly, you know, it has to be put out of its misery. And on that note, I was pulling different articles. And let me just stay with me, Paul, on this. And if you got to go, just let us know. But since January 26th of this year, okay, state agency investigates Kansas City area animal shelter after complaints, January 26th. February 1st, owner of dog rescue faces felony charge after 78 dogs removed from the home. That's in Michigan. Founder of Poodle Rescue arrested on charges of animal cruelty. That's here in our state, Paul, February 10th. I think that was in Milton, okay, buddy? You know that. Yeah. Yep. March 30th, we're getting closer to April 5th. Illinois, McLean County Animal Shelter Top Paw faces investigation amid allegations of inhumane care and hoarding. Thursday, March 30th, 17 dogs and Humane Center Society care after home animal rescue overwhelmed. That was in Oregon. Now, let me go back to the one I just mentioned. April 3rd came in my inbox, Monday. McLean County Animal Shelter Top Paw faces investigation amid allegations of inhumane care and hoarding. Do you see what's happening here, folks? We've got what I feel it is tied to is this no-kill mentality, which I believe is a damn myth. They are saying until we save them all by 2025, which is right around the corner, we're going to save them all. So therefore, we're going to move and make these shelters no-till. So what we're seeing now is massive hoarding, massive amounts of dogs being in boarding, which is not good long-term. This particular article, which I just mentioned about McLean County in Illinois, there's a picture, and I'm not going to give the name of this other rescue, but it says here, an animal shelter in blank, 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 said on its Facebook page that three puppies were found abandoned in a crate in Rockford, Illinois. The shelter said the dogs had been traced back to Top Paw, which is the one facing investigation amid allegations, calling Top Paw's actions frustrating, infuriating, and expensive. So I look at that name of the rescue with these puppies, and I go to their Facebook page. Just 3 days ago, I'm going to read this to you. It's a little lengthy, and if you want to mute yourself, get yourself a glass of water or whatever. 3 days ago, I'm not going to mention the rescue, they talked about two dogs. Just over a year ago, we were contacted by a Rockford family, Rockford, Illinois. They had two small children and two dogs. We tried to support the dogs staying in the home, but the circumstances wouldn't allow for it. One partner was extremely ill and in and out of the hospital, leaving way too much on the other partner's plate. We set up a visit with the family and met the two dogs. One, Nina, a hound mix 6 to 8 month old. She was shy but warmed up quickly. The other was Rascal, also 6 to 8 months old. He wanted to eat us, and we believed him. We had hoped it was initial stranger danger. We found foster placement for Nina pretty quickly, and her story goes like this. I'm not going to go into Nina because she's fine. She's safe. She's doing well. Okay, Rascal, listen to this. His placement was harder because we didn't feel he was safe. We got a call that he needed to go somewhere ASAP. The partner had passed away, and through all of the illness and hospitalizations, they had fallen behind on rent, and the family was being evicted in days. We took our highest value reward food and crossed our fingers picking up Rascal. We had nowhere for him to go, so off to blank blank he went. Over a few weeks, staff started to be able to handle him. He was getting friendlier. Oh, can you mute yourself, Paul? Just press on the mute button.
Well, that's not.
You can still hear me.
That's not me. That's not
okay,
me.
Julia, mute yourself, please. Okay. Over a few weeks, staff started to be able to handle him. He was getting friendlier. We were hopeful. We found a foster with other dogs and no small children. Rascal certainly showed signs of stranger danger, but we were working on that through our trainer. He was also exhibiting severe separation anxiety. He would break out of his crate and destroy things. We locked his crate down that things were close to his crate, or he could move his crate to get a blanket, towel, anything on the floor. He'd pull it into his crate and destroy it. Off to the vet for him. That didn't go great either, as he was extremely fearful. We did get him on medication, Prozac, for everyone. That, combined with training, counter conditioning, and management, Rascal showed potential. Then he backslid. We went through ups and downs, and the foster considered keeping him, knowing he'd be hard to place. Okay, listen, it gets better. In September, he attended our annual fundraiser. People threw treats in his direction at our request, and he'd be fine until he wasn't. Now, let's go back to that after I finish, because I don't like that, throwing treats at him, but maybe you can correct me, Paul or Julia. And he'd be fine until he wasn't. He was a huge bite risk, all 65 pounds of him. At that point, we were concerned about safely placing him. The foster wasn't there yet. She continued to work with him. 2 weeks ago, the foster reached out and expressed deep concerns. Rascal, now 18 months old, his developmental window closed, had had medications, CBD, actual extract, training, counter conditioning, every support you could think of. He was now not safe nor predictable in the home. He was a bite risk to anyone coming to the house. He wasn't able to be brought to the vet without sedating him, and even that didn't really work. He was guarding his foster from the other dogs in the home, and he was going into a stare, freeze, slash, whale-eyed, which equals bite warning, frequently within the home and unpredictable. Rascal has always lived the majority of his life in flight or fight. He lived in a near constant state of emotional suffering, almost always in guard, anxious in a way that came out that equals not safe. Behavioral euthanasia is frequently not talked about. It's taboo. It shouldn't be. We aren't going to hide this death in the dark. We are going to honor Rascal by telling his story. His life meant something, and he meant something not only to us, but the foster family that put everything into him over the course of the year. For that year, Rascal had true moments of peace and love. He was spoiled with treats, toys, training, a fenced backyard, a lake house, boat rides, and unconditional love. Being with him while he was sedated, he was the most relaxed he'd ever been. He seemed content and restful. The horrors of our world and inside his head slowly fading in the rear view. Rascal, you were loved and are missed. Please take care of puppy Victor for us. Friends, please keep the foster family in your thoughts. And they showed the picture of him. Looks like he's a big chocolate brown lab. So, like Julia said, these dogs possibly cannot be rehabilitated. But if you are one of these rescues that are adopting them out again and again, you deserve to be sued, and you deserve to have your 501c3 taken away. And we've got a situation
Absolutely.
Here in Georgia, which I will get to. And I know your time is valuable, Paul. How much time do we have with you, my friend?
How much do you need? Because I really do need to get going.
No, we can continue. Is there anything you want to add on that note? With that being said, you and I talked about this other rescue located right here in Roswell, Georgia. Everybody's afraid of this woman. Apparently, she's in trouble with the city of Roswell for running a shelter where she's not allowed to. Apparently, she's going to a court case. There is a case about a dog named Oakley that, again, the foster had not been told about Oakley's bite history. The rescue I'm talking about is Two Tails Rescue with a Z, so it's Two Tails instead of S with a Z. I've obtained a police report. I'm gathering more information. I spoke to the bite victim. This incident occurred on December 1st of 2020. The rescue, Two Tails, run by Caroline O'Brien, allegedly told the victim, I will pay for your medical bills, which was a $3,000 copay, to the hospital. The police officer got bit. And guess what?
Wow.
Crickets. She never fulfilled what she told this person. And she also... And it's perfect because people send me screenshots. I'm not doing this by myself, guys. There are people behind the scenes helping to expose wrongdoing, okay? And this woman had the audacity to send me a cease and desist to try and quiet me. And she currently has somebody in a lawsuit where she has threatened other people with cease and desist. This is what these rogue rescues do. And I encourage, if you want to send me a cease and desist, you better follow through with a lawsuit. Because with a lawsuit, as Julia fully knows, you can bring in discovery, interrogatories, witnesses, okay? So you don't like me? Good. There's a reason why you don't like me, because I'm not going to side with
there
evil.
There you go.
And I'm not going to side with a fake rescue. And Julia knows about this. Paul, on that note, what do you want to say in closing? And then I'll let you go and begin the rest of your day.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. There are rescues, and I'm familiar – years ago with the rescue you're talking about, and I used to like her. I mean, I don't know her now, but I keep hearing you're not the only one. This is the third person that's contacted me about this particular rescue, and, you know, I'm just not in the game. I mean, when last I heard, she was on the level. There's only a couple of rescues in the area. One of them went, you know, Carla Anderson had was a bullseye rescue, and they did everything just right. They everything was done how it's supposed to be done. And after 5 or 6 years, I think she just, you know, she kind of disbanded and people went different ways. And it's unfortunate because it was a great rescue. Jason Flatt, a lot of people he runs rubs the wrong way, but he is a good rescue. And the, his animals are cared for. He's got foster homes, so I'm not saying there couldn't be problems there, but it's run well. And you know, there, but basically I've never had an issue with Jason. He helped with pit bulls, which are my thing, for several years. And But yes, you are absolutely correct. Everything to be no kill, number one, if you follow the money, it applies here too.
Thank
when
you.
When you got rescues, you get a dog that was hit by a car and all of a sudden they're collecting for this abuse where he was beaten, you know, and a lot of them do it. It's not isolated. People give money. I had a person she raised $15,000 for $1,000 bill. It was her first time doing a GoFundMe. And I don't know that there was any strings attached to it. And I said, I don't think it's illegal what you have done. I'm not a lawyer, but I think you ought to be very careful. And if there's any way to give back the money, I would give back the money, you know. But I've seen it happen. I'll give you this story and then go. Let me not name the rescue. It's a rescue out of New York that Fulton County Animal Services used a lot and still uses. And several years ago, I think it was 2015, 15 or 16, got a call about a puppy that had been picked up for some people and brought to a vet, and it had been thrown over a fence, and it had a broken jaw and a broken leg and had cigarette burns, and it had been sexually molested. I'm like, damn. And my boss said, you know, go, man, you need to check that out. This doesn't sound right. So I got over there and just started asking some basic questions. Like, well, ma'am, what makes you think this dog was thrown over the fence? Because I've seen an 18-inch gap at the bottom of the fence. And she said, well, I didn't say it was. That's what the white lady said, because this is in a black neighborhood. So this is what the white woman said when they came and picked up the dog. I'm oh, God, this is unraveling. And I don't know what the vet said to them, actually, in Clayton County. The dog was transferred to Fulton County, and then they just don't keep the chain of evidence well. They sent it to a rescue, and I told Audrey down there, I said, you cannot just get rid of and sever all relationship with an animal where you're investigating for cruelty. I said, I need permission to go talk to them, and to talk to the doctors up at Blue Pearl. So I got it and went to them, and the story was hogwash. It was a terribly ill puppy, had diarrheaed its life out virtually, you know. No busted up. I mean, it did have a leg that was kind of, but nothing was wrong with its jaw. It was no busted jaw. There was no sexual cigarette burns or sexual action to the dog. It was inflamed because it had tremendous diarrhea. So we let the rescue know. But the money was pouring in on the original stuff.
Of course.
It went north of $100,000. And the woman at the time that was in charge of, I don't want to, she's easy to find, but I don't want to mention her name. It was in charge of the rescue division, was getting death threats because I told her, and she told the rescue that there wasn't a case here. This wasn't a cruelty case. And they were giving her death threats. So one of them called me, and I said, before you start threatening me, because if you threaten me, I'm going to hunt you down. And she's, oh, no, I just want to know what's going on. And so I said, well, it's all the information's wrong. I said, she's right. Audrey's right that all the information is wrong. It's a terribly sick dog that they did have to euthanize. We went out. The district attorney got involved under Paul Howard's office. And because of all this hoopla around this dog. So I found out where the dog came from. It's not really that tough. All you got to do is talk to people. They're so afraid to talk to people in the hood. But it was a couple of young boys, 12 and 13, that lived next door to an abandoned house. And they found a puppy and they kept him at the abandoned house. There's no crime there. There's not a crime there.
No.
But at the abandoned house was open antifreeze. So my theory, which I think is pretty strong, is that at that time antifreeze did not have the additive in it to make them not. They would drink it. If it was available, they'd drink it.
Right.
It's
horrible. It was very sweet tasting to them, yes.
And it caused that diarrhea. Everything fell into place. He made it about a block and a half, that was where he ended. And so nobody wanted to hear that, though. I said, well, you can make any conversation you want on it. There is no cruelty. Yeah. They wanted the guy served. I am not serving this fella any kind of a ticket for something he didn't even know, and his kids are just trying to be kids. They're juveniles. You might take it up with the juveniles. They didn't kill this dog. The city shouldn't allow this crap to be next door to a house where people live in. It's just, it's just a blighted area. So it went away, but it never really went away. And that's the biggest one I know of, but there are a lot of little, you add to the story and you get the donations. And it's sickening.
Yeah. The drama brings the money in, and the sad thing is the majority of dogs out there that need, vet care basically just need their shots updated, worming, some heartworm tests, get on their prevention, and let's get you gone, $300. Hey, we're going now,
It's insane.
See these dogs, they throw this terrible, tragic story up before they even have their hands on the dog. They haven't taken the dog from the shelter, or they haven't picked the dog up from the person. The dog has not been to the vet yet, but the dog already has a tragic story, and the story's already starting to circulate. And they get to the vet's office, and the money's coming in, and you get to the vet's office. Okay, the dog's got demodectic mange. Nobody threw chemicals on it. let's give it a Bravecto. These are easy fixes.
But, let me just jump in here because we do have a call waiting. And I will tell you that, Julia, you're right. It pulls on people's heartstrings. They donate. And what we're seeing among these rogue rescues that learn from one another, scum attracts scum, liars stick with liars, they're picking on the same trend where they make the dog worse than what it really is, okay? Perfect example, what you just mentioned, Julia, your story, Paul. And, Paul, I will tell you, people that have left that rescue I just mentioned, okay, she's also making up these stories to get more money, okay? That's fraud.
Sure.
That is, in my opinion, theft by deception.
Yeah.
But on that note, I'm going to bring in this next caller. Is there anything else, Paul? Thank you for your time. I know you're busy.
No, just want to make sure the caller doesn't have a question for me.
Okay, let me bring in. Thank you. You're right. Thank you. Caller, you are on the air. Hey, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hello,
you're on the air with Inspector Bark, Julia, and Paul from Georgia. Julia's from Kentucky. Thank you for listening.
This is Gina from Guard Dog.
Hey, Gina, how you doing? Well, introduce yourself to Paul. I don't think he's ever had the pleasure of knowing your name or the page you run. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about you, Gina. Thank you.
I run Guard Dog USA. It is a whistleblower page. And my name is Gina. I really don't know what else to say to introduce myself. Besides the fact that I think Facebook is shadow banning a lot of whistleblower pages because they're just not getting the traction they used to.
They aren't. My page has dropped so bad. My Stop the Trickling Foundation page stats have really gone down.
Yeah, we have over 6,000 followers.
Yeah.
And we're getting 1 or 2 shares. Huh?
Yeah. It says 7,000.
Yeah.
I'm looking. I just pulled up.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So there you go. We used to get 500 shares a post, and now it's down to 1 or 2 or 10. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Hey, Gina, I got to scoot unless you got a question for me.
Yeah. Do you have a question for Paul? Because he does have to head out.
No.
Okay.
Paul,
I'll get with Paul.
Yep.
No worries. Good to talk to you. I hope I can talk to you all again. I know I'll talk to Dark, but
thank
I hope I can talk to you all again.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Talk to you later.
Buddy.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
You have
Bye-bye.
A good one.
Bye, sir.
Bye.
So even though he says he's out of the business, people still call him. People still call him from all over Georgia. And that tells me that to me speaks volumes because, you know, he
it
was
does.
That well respected. So,
yeah.
Gina, you're right about that. And Julia, I'm glad that you're saying that you're seeing that as well on your page, because the bad and the ugly, we're having the same problem that, you know, we post a story and the visibility is gone. It's like there's a blanket, black blanket over a cloud over.
Yeah.
And I've always said, to be honest with you, I don't believe Facebook and whoever runs Facebook out there in California, they're the friends of the animals. Why should we be penalized for exposing the truth?
It doesn't seem like it. It really doesn't seem like it, does it? It just, I don't know. I don't think we're getting the right exposure anymore.
It's very sad because people need to know. We are already with less than 30 minutes left of the show, and Gina, I want you to jump in here because I know that Julia has mentioned this is a hot topic of hers, and this is about pledges. I know the admin over there at Scam Rescue, Sunday Garcia, that's her hot button as well. She cannot stand seeing these rogue rescues. Now, there's good rescues, and they need the money. Of course, all these reputable rescues need the money. But these reputable rescues need to keep in mind that these rogue rescues are basically taking money away from them. And they don't want to speak up. They're afraid to speak up. And let me just tell you, and I laughed with Julia the other day, because on one particular rescue down in Florida, you've got the scammers scamming the scammers. Now, let me explain that, right? The scammers are scamming the scammers.
That's still making me laugh, Darcy.
Thank you. Well, let me explain this to Gina. Gina, I go on this page. They're very good at marketing. Oh, help, help. The dog is going to be euthanized, you know, and all this pulling at people's heartstrings. And please, pledge now, pledge now. The dog is not even in their possession, okay? Please pledge,
yeah,
pledge,
we can
pledge.
Save the dog if it. We get the money. If we get the money, we can save him. Yeah.
Correct. So, and I'm going to let Julia take over, and Gina, you chime in. But I'm seeing these comments, right? All of a sudden, I see this other woman say, yes, here you go. Any donations, send here. And she's writing her own Venmo. And if people are that stupid and ignorant to say, okay, yeah, throw money at them, I mean, I can't even get a bone thrown at me. And these people are saying, yeah, give me the money. Okay? So the scammers are scamming the scammers. And on that note, Julia, you and Gina can talk among yourselves. I'm going to mute myself and get myself some more iced tea. Go ahead. I can hear you.
Well, here's my thing. As a networker, I see this a lot. Need pledges to attract rescue. Okay, that's not how you network. You network the animal. I mean, this is logical common sense to me. You network the animal in need. If a rescue pops up and says, we would love to help, but we just don't have the funds right now. We had, you know, this surgery, that surgery, this one was sick with this or that, blah, blah, blah. That's when the networker can say, okay, then, can I post that you will definitely take this dog if there's a sponsorship? And that's when you edit your post and say, okay, dog whatever rescue has willingly committed to this dog if we can raise funds because they're low on funds, whatever. You know what I'm saying. But this after post, and I see it a lot in my area, need pledges to attract rescue. Are you checking these rescues out? Because as a networker, you should not only just be networking for rescue, you should be checking these rescues out thoroughly because that dog or cat's life is in your hands first before you agree to let that rescue have that dog. You should be looking at their website.
Absolutely.
You should be asking your other fellow networkers. You should be going over their application. And you should be asking them simple questions like, does the animal have to come back to you? Does it state in your contract the animal must come back to you if the adopter no longer wants or cannot keep? Do you microchip? Does that microchip stay in the rescue's name for life of the animal? Because, you know, sometimes adopters move, forget to change their number, et cetera. And do you do in-person home inspections? Because that's very important. Anybody can look good on paper. virtual home inspections, people are going to show you what they want to show you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as a networker, you should be doing your due diligence when you take it upon yourself to network that animal. And then on the other, on the flip side of things, rescues need money. They are 501c3.
Oh, absolutely.
Most of these people have full-time jobs that supports their own home and families. But again, it is the donor's responsibility to check out these rescues before they give them a boatload of money.
Make,
I mean, you can't
make
just
sure,
let a post
know,
on your heartstrings.
Your
you need
exactly.
to,
make
like
sure.
a networker, research that rescue.
Make sure you know who you're giving your money to. Make sure you know who you're
exactly.
donating to.
Exactly.
I mean, if I hate pledging in threads. I really do. I have a real issue with it because I consider that bait for bad rescue. When I see a dog's picture thrown up on Facebook and nobody's got possession of this dog yet, it's still sitting in a shelter or it's still
exactly.
in a bad situation. And you're looking at
he
the threat.
Pledges to attract a rescue.
Here,
what rescue are you attracting?
Oh, yeah, I'm pledging $10, $20, $30. I pledge $50. I pledge this. And they watch these threads. These bad guys are out there. They're like hawks. They are watching it. And when those threads get up real high, there's a lot of pledges here. Okay, we'll take this dog. There, you know, you get a freedom picture, which I hate. You know, a freedom picture doesn't mean there's any follow-up afterwards. I want to know how the dog's doing
exactly.
a week from now. I don't want to know how they're doing on their ride out of the shelter. I want to see how they're doing in a week, 2 weeks, you know.
See, this is what I call assembly line rescue.
It is. And it,
because it's like, look at my numbers. Look how many I got out of the shelter. Look what I did. I don't care about your assembly line.
It's a numbers game. Yes.
Right.
It
I want to see the pictures. Because, I mean, let's talk about, what was her name, Sabrina Dorsher, Love Shack Rescue in Virginia.
Yeah, Dresher.
Oh,
yeah,
everybody loves Sabrina. Correct. She was just the cat's meow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, until she got busted and there were dead
yeah.
dogs found in plastic trash bags on the outside of outside dog kennels where the other ones were living.
The creepy guy.
But everybody, hey, Sabrina can take this dog, blah, blah, blah. Nobody inspected this rescue. I literally
Randy
had a rescue
Skaggs
tell me one time you're going to love
dog.
This.
Randy Skaggs took a dog from Robert Kirkman, the founder of the writer of the Walking Dead series. A man
oh,
with
God.
Millions of dollars, he gave his dog to Randy Skaggs at the Trixie Foundation. No due diligence, no research. A simple Google search out of a millionaire would have told him very quickly what kind of place the Trixie Foundation was. But he didn't care.
Well, that's like all these people that still defend Michael Vick. He paid his dues. He did his time.
No,
he didn't.
He didn't
do any time
no,
over the animals. No, I didn't. Read the FBI report. I mean, or the, what is it called? The U.S. Marshals report, because I've read it. It's online. He didn't do any time
horrific.
For that.
No.
It is. And,
he
oh,
didn't.
Now he's a spokesperson for Humane Society. I don't care.
Let me jump in here. Thank you, ladies, for talking while I was able to eat my lunch, because I haven't eaten a thing all day. So thank you. That's
oh,
the beauty
Lord
of
Dorothy.
Doing your radio podcast. Thank you. I muted myself. I listen to everything. And, you know, Gina is spot on about, and she does, I know what she does. She will question these people and send them a private message, and she will interrogate them in a right manner, not in a mean way. But, I mean, I've heard she's shared with me the exchange, and she will, you know, press the issue. She will ask to speak to them, because if you are a responsible networker, cross-poster, you need to really know where these dogs are going. We have a bunch of dimwits, which is what they are, down in South Florida,
mm-hmm.
that they think, oh, a dog got out of the kill shelter, whether it's MDAS, Miami-Dade Animal Services, Broward County, which is Fort Lauderdale. They think they've done wonderful things. Well, guess what? Just like you, Julia, I don't want to see the dog in a car as it's leaving the parking lot. For all I know, they're circling around that parking lot to make it look legit and then shove the dog back in, you know, somewhere. I sent you two links.
Unfortunately, yeah.
This morning, Julia.
Sadly,
I sent you two links. I don't know if you saw them. They're both related to the same rescue. I sent them to you on Facebook Messenger. And this person, that God forbid you question, She gets her little flying monkeys out to beat you up on Facebook social media. These people are not in their right mind. They're basically, in my opinion, they're delusional, they're deranged. They are nothing but scammers. But they play the game well, and they know how to market.
Well, another thing I don't understand about Florida, and you see this on a lot of their posts too, this was a multiple rescue endeavor. Why does it take more than one rescue to pull a dog? And then what rescue is responsible?
Yeah.
Are you both responsible? Because that's what happened in this case of Sophia out of Florida. This rescue pulled the dog, and then she was at this dude's house for training, the guy that drug her to death and killed her. And, oh, well, then this other rescue was going to take her, and behind this other rescue's back. And I'm like, how do you not know this? I mean, it doesn't take more than one rescue to pull a dog from a county shelter.
No.
They all want
that's just a load of.
All they're doing is stealing that story and using it for their own self-satisfaction, for their own
Exactly. So you got two rescues using the same freaking dog, and you're like, what?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
No.
And then, when you call them out, and then when you call them out, then they go on and attack you, they block you, they delete you. Listen, I've been doing this a long time. You ladies have as well. You know how they operate. God forbid you expose what you're doing. You expose their scamming. That's affecting their pocketbook. Well, thank you, Julia, because I just sent out my second letter, complaint form to IRS 3949-A, information referral. I have referred it to other people, and I do a cover letter on my Inspector Bark stationery. They've got to stop.
Awesome.
The IRS, charities and nonprofit, they need to stop giving every Tom, Dick, and Harry a 501c3 status because it is a disaster happening. You mix the word and combine rescue to nonprofit, the general public, who for the most part are very gullible, very naive, see this, they think, well, oh, they're a nonprofit. I'm going to give them money. This is why I'm going to work behind the scenes and talk to you ladies privately, which I've talked to Gina about, Julie, I talked to you about. If we need to get a secret sponsor, because God forbid they're you know, supporting our mission, which is exposing wrongdoing, they'll come under pressure, you know. The crowd will attack them when what we're doing is the right thing and the crowd is doing the wrong thing, okay? I like to stand alone.
Yeah.
I'm not friends with any rescues, nor do I care to be, you know, and they'll say, oh, well, Darcy will turn on you. I'll turn on my own mother. I'll turn on my own children if I know they're harming an animal or a child. I will rat them out. And for these rescues to stick up for each other and know something, shame on you.
Personally, I don't think it's that hard to do rescue right. I've been doing rescue a very long time, you know, and I would much rather do things right and on the up and up than have that shadow of wrongdoing hanging over me. That would be unbearable to deal with. Don't these people worry that they're breaking the law ever? No,
they have no scruples.
It's unfathomable to me to live like that. I just don't get it. I really don't.
But, you know, the very first number one rule of rescue is do not take on more than you can handle. And we see every day that these rescues, these fly-by-night rescues, as I call them, we had to pull him because he was going to die. Well, okay, so you pulled him. He's not going to die, but 10 others are. So why didn't you pull all 10 of them? I mean, that's a sorry excuse. But I wanted to tell, I think I've told you this one, Darcy. I want to tell, what's your name, Julia?
Yeah.
Julia, yes.
Okay. Let me tell you this, you'll love this one. So as a networker, like I said, I asked my three basic simple questions. I was networking this dog one time, and this rescue from out of New Jersey, don't remember the name, wasn't worth remembering, said they would take the dog. So I was like, what about transport, blah, blah, blah. Well, we have fosters all over the eastern seaboard, okay? I said, okay, well, you know, I'm in a southern state, so are you saying that the dog goes to New Jersey? What are you saying exactly? Well, no, one of our fosters in your area would foster the dog. Okay. So what if somebody in, say, Georgia, Florida, New York wants to adopt the dog? How does that work? Well, then it would be transported to the adopter. Okay, so the adopter gets the dog that it's never met in person. Well, we have a very good success rate for adoption. I said, right, but my question is, what if this adopter has other animals? There's been no meet and greet. They're just going to pick this dog up off transportation, take that dog home, probably won't listen to your decompression instructions. Therefore, a bloodbath could happen in 5 minutes. So my question is, say the dog is being fostered in Georgia and the dog is traveling to New Jersey. It doesn't work out in New Jersey. What's the backup plan? Do you have a foster in New Jersey that's, you know, going to take over? You know, and then, of course, I ask her my microchip question, my home inspection, does your contract state? And then she was like, you know, I've never been questioned like this before. And I said,
what?
Oh, okay. I didn't realize I was asking anything out of the ordinary. I'm just asking you what the backup plan is, especially if there's no opportunity for meet and greet. And, you know, are you going to get that home inspection done? You know, the dog's in Georgia. It's going to New York. Will that home inspection be done by somebody in the New York area for you? You know, like I said, your questions are really starting to make me feel uncomfortable. And I said, well, your lack of rescue knowledge is making me feel uncomfortable. I said, I'm asking you the obvious. Why can't you answer it? If you need help in the future, maybe we'll be able to. I said, honey, I don't think I'll ever need help from you. I mean, if you can't answer that, we're done. So that's how a lot of these rescues are doing crap, too. Yeah, we got fosters in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, but we're based in New York, and the dog's going to be fostered in one of these states, but then the adopter could be in New York, Oklahoma, whatever. Oh, y'all can just pick it up on transport. Really? Okay.
Wow.
Do you know how crazy stressed it makes a dog to travel that long? And are these adopters going to do the decompression time like you do when a dog comes out of a shelter? No, because most new adopters are like, oh, it didn't work out.
This is
he tried to kill
risky.
My other dog. Well, maybe it's because he never met your other dog to begin with. See, this is another rescue problem that I have. And I'm not rescue bashing because I've got a lot of very good rescues in my area that I support wholeheartedly.
You know, I belong to For All Paws Sake. We're a network of very well-vetted rescues and transporters and shelters in the South. And, you know, everybody in our network fills out the application. Our application is very thorough and very lengthy, but it's there for a reason. It's there to protect the animals. You know, we care about what we're doing. And, you know, I don't understand how people can sit there and use animals like this. I mean, they're innocent. It's horrible. But in this world, people use children. People use cancer to scam people. You know, they're just awful people in this world. And the issues in the nonprofit sector don't just apply to dog rescue. I mean, this goes for cat rescue. This goes for all kinds of people rescue. And,
it does.
You know, there's scam nonprofits in every sector. There really are. And it's shameful. I wish there was some oversight.
Let me read something.
I don't see it changing anytime soon, though.
Well, I know, and we talk about that. We talk about it all the time, but we've got to keep fighting the fight, and we get frustrated.
Yes,
we all
do.
We need
don't
to take
stop.
A break. We need to tap on that, you know, break for every now and then. But we've got about 10 minutes left. I want to read something with what you just mentioned, Julia. And I love putting this in a folder, and I keep it here on my desk for the next podcast. People expect evil to appear in obvious forms, announcing itself, clearly displaying its intentions. That's what people expect, but that's not reality. Evil is subversive, manipulative, tricking you into thinking that it's good, and tricking you into giving it your consent.
These people are evil. Wow. They are imposters, and they have invaded and infiltrated into the world of the animal welfare community in one way or the other, whether it's bad veterinarian practice, as we just heard, the bad vet techs, or the ones that are not even licensed. We've got bad shelter directors. These people don't care. And then pile on top of it, the local, state, and federal levels, government agencies that are lazy, turn a blind eye, a deaf ear, and sweep it under the carpet. And they know that if you were to call, Julia calls, Gina calls, in time they know if they don't answer or respond back, they'll just go away. So they
yeah.
want that.
Well, you forgot pass the buck.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, yeah, we
and
deal
you,
with that
you
here
have
in
a famous
Kentucky.
Quote.
We
you go ahead.
What quote?
Gina, I love this quote from her. And she'll call people, and then I'll let you finish. I didn't mean to cut you off because of the two-second delay, it's a problem. Gina will say, when she speaks to an animal control officer, for example, I love it, and I steal her quote. Don't tell me what you can't do. Tell me what you can do. I love that. Gina, that's all you.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yes.
Well, that'll be what I go down in history as being famous for.
there you go. What were you going to say, Julia? I'm going to go ahead and mute myself. We have less than 8 minutes. Go ahead.
Oh, I totally forgot now, Darcy. Oh, my God.
It's okay.
It was a long night.
It's okay.
It was a long night. No, but things do have to change. We all hope for regulation all the time. This is what we always talk about. Oh, somebody's got to regulate it. That gets into a big whole ball of wax with the USDA, because if we start regulating rescues, well, then we've got to regulate puppy mills, don't we? And you're going to have the same people inspecting puppy mills that are inspecting rescues. And we would have to adopt a standard of care. And I just do not see that happening anytime soon. I don't see us ever having federal regulation anytime soon. So I really think we need to focus on local ordinances and getting state laws passed. I think that's going
to
be
which
how
is what
we
I'm
end.
Currently trying to do. I've been in a constant battle for 4 or 5 years now with
yeah,
my
it's,
local
it's
city
a
council.
Long battle. It's a long battle. It always is a long battle. I've been fighting Randy Skaggs since 2003. So it's
oh, Julia, let me tell
easy.
You another funny one. What do you think about a cat rescue that doesn't microchip because they feel like that money is better spent on vet bills? You know, like you can't order microchips online.
Isn't microchipping part of vet bills, though? That should fall under vet care.
No, because there's other things
care.
Like shots and deworming that are more important. Of course they are. So I asked this rescue, do you realize how many solid black, yellow, gray, and calicos there are in county shelters? So if a cat you adopt out goes to a county shelter, how do you know? You don't.
Right. You don't. You absolutely don't, because I'm sorry. I love cats. I do, but there are a lot of dime a dozen cats. They all look the same.
Exactly.
You know, and I don't mean that in an offensive way. I don't. You know,
no.
But it's the truth. I mean, striped cats are striped cats. Black cats with yellow eyes are lanky. And, you know, yeah, they're cats.
Right.
So, yeah.
I have a black cat that lives on my porch. She is set up better than any dog in my community just simply because we're dog people. I mean, we love our cat, obviously, but our dogs do not. So she's safer where she is, and she is microchipped and everything else because her being solid black, if she lands in a county shelter, am I going to know my cat and her meow? Yeah, I am. But
yeah.
On the average, just looking at a picture of a solid black cat with green eyes, am I going to know that's my cat just looking online? No, I'm not.
No, you're going to have to go to the shelter. You're physically going to have to go to the shelter. It's a lot easier.
Right. I'm
going
to have to go to the shelter. I'm going to have to say her name. And I'm one of those people that would, obviously. But there's so many that's
right.
not.
That
but,
won't.
And these rescues.
That won't.
Yeah, but these rescues, you know, saying, oh, yeah, we take back all of our animals. How can you say you take back all of your animals if you're not even microchipping them?
Mm-hmm.
But
good
yet
point.
Donors are funding you.
But this goes back to what I think, ladies, and we've got about 4 minutes left. This goes back to the fly-by-nights, as you refer to them, as I do as well. Gina, maybe I stole that line from you as well. They're fly-by-nights. They figure, just like this one, and we don't have time to talk about it, the one that just came onto the scene, right? And you had asked me to send a question to the individual. I can't remember. Her and her boyfriend wanted to start a rescue, and they're just, you know, already 2 weeks into it, and horrible puppies are dying. And people just wake up one day, no education in the animal welfare. They don't know how to properly clean, you know, the kennels. They are having parvo puppies mixed with other healthy puppies. They don't know what they're doing, but they decide, oh, let's just become a rescue. This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with these people that are inept, just like this one that was discussed, Babushka. Babushka Rescue, huh? In Pennsylvania. And this was just published in March 25th, 2023. This happened in February of 2020, where the founder of Babushka Rescue, this is in February 2020, her name is Holly Erin Schiller. The owner and operator of Babushka pleaded guilty before Judge So-and-So to 7 counts of animal cruelty, each graded as a second-degree misdemeanor. So she became a rescue. Right? But then people said, well, she wasn't all mentally there. Well, guess what she was doing? She was taking care of her own animals, but those that she was rescuing, she was starving to death. Okay?
Okay.
He found, the animal control officer found the house was saturated in animal urine and feces filled with small dogs that obviously had been malnourished and neglected. Their cat coats were matted and covered in fecal matter, and they were skinny and crying. Bones were protruding from under their skin, and they showed visual signs of dehydration. I want to know, and it goes on, it's troubling to hear, I want to know how many people saw this and did not say a thing, did not say a word.
Oh, someone
instead turned a blind eye
someone
and
knew.
A deaf ear. Of course they did. Of course they did.
Yes.
And this is where, if they did even maybe try to lodge a complaint, did it fall upon the local animal control shelter,
deaf ear,
police, whoever, did they? There you go. It is frustrating. We're under 2 minutes. Yeah. On that note, I really would like to continue this segment about pledges and how it does. It is a bait for bad rescues. I really agree with you on that, Julia. And Gina, you bring so much to the table. Thank you for all that you do. I've got a quote here on Joe Montana, right? Famous Joe Montana. At the age of 65, I wrote this down, and this was back in November. I got 90-second warning. 11/15/2022, I wrote this down, Joe Montana, quote, at the age of 65, I have little patience for nonsense and insufficiency. These people do not know how to run a rescue. She liked it. Okay. That's Joe Montana. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for liking that. But for myself, I am Inspector Bark. You will not muzzle me, even though I'm Inspector Bark. You will not muzzle me because there is so much financial fraud within quote-unquote rescue, the bunny ears rescue, it is becoming more and more of a national epidemic. And if somebody is attacking you on a personal level, you know you're probably doing something right. On that note, you got 10
stand
seconds, Julia,
your ground.
What would you like to say? And there you go.
Stand your ground. Stand your ground. That's
the
it.
Truth
stand
is
stand
on your
ground.
Side.
Yep. The truth
That's
is
it.
The best defense. Absolutely. Ladies, thank you so much. We're down to 30 seconds. I would like to – I could do a podcast with everything that comes onto my plate, comes onto your lady's plate, Gina, you know, Julie, everybody else, Joey's Legacy. We could do a podcast 5 days a week. On that note, I'm down to 10 seconds.
Oh, the time flies by.
Thank you, ladies. There you go. Yep, it sure does.
Yay.
Ladies, thank you so much. I'll post the next episode in the next couple of weeks. Have a good day. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye,
you too.
Everybody.
You too.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you.